Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. I'm glad that everybody who's here is here, and we have a good one for you today. We have three programs. The main one, the large one, is going to be the Mutual Radio Theater, and also this is a program that we feature in the 10th hour on the Radio Theater Channel. So you want to go ahead and check that out. If you like this program, check it out for sure at tuneinradio.com, and then click search, and then enter the All-Time Oldies Radio Theater Channel, and then click the icon. You can also get us on Streama. Go to Streama.com and search for it for the All-Time Oldies Radio Theater Channel, and you'll hear some great new programs. We've got a new lineup, mainly in the last 5 hours of our weekly schedule, and we hope you join us there for some good stuff. One of the shows is going to be the Mutual Radio Theater, and this today we have an episode of that. It's The Voyage of No Return, and that's from 1980. This is a revival radio show done late in the broadcast career of drama radio here in America, but we have it. So I hope you enjoy it. Then after the Mutual Radio Theater, we'll have an episode, a short episode, of Fibber McGee and Molly. And because we've got that, we're going to lead in with the great Gildersleeve, because those two were kind of competitors on that show. Now settle down and get ready to listen to the Mutual Radio Theater and The Voyage of No Return.
This is Vincent Price. Here's another item for your Bermuda Triangle scrapbook. This one we will solve for you within the hour. The solution will be more simple, more complete, and more reasonable than most you have heard from that mysterious area. And yet, when you hear the solution, you may find it more disquieting than the mystery. For then you will always wonder, when you've made a simple purchase at the store, a loaf of bread, a pair of shoes, a palatial new yacht, what else may be wrapped up in the package?
But Henry, dear, it's an absolute dream boat. Now, isn't it?
Well, it is a pretty boat, Celia.
And the price. Who would imagine that you and I could buy a boat like this at such a price?
Oh, Mr. Merrickin's price is good, my love. So good, in fact, that...
That what, dear?
That I wonder what's the matter with the boat. Is it haunted?
That's only the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week, brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, The Voyage of No Return by Edward Borges. Our stars, Jeanette Nolan, Harley Bear, and Eddie Firestone.
The story you were about to hear starts with a newspaper clipping. That clipping is from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And here's what it says. Guests at the Tropica Hotel, who came out for an early morning swim today, found a bizarre spectacle waiting for them down on the beach. 2 corpses washed up side by side, each in full evening attire. No wounds, but quite dead. Police have tentatively identified the couple as Mr. and Mrs. George Willoughby of Akron, Ohio. A retired factory executive, Willoughby, moved to Miami Beach with his wife about a month ago. There they are reported to have purchased a beautiful ocean-going yacht. Since neither Mr. and Mrs. Willoughby had ever dipped their toes into an ocean before this month, it's unthinkable that they would have been so rash as to set out to sea alone in their new yacht. But the Flamingo, which 3 days ago was tied securely to its Miami Beach moorings, has now vanished. Another weird blank from the world's most sinister stretch of ocean. Well, that's the clipping. Right at this moment, it doesn't mean a thing to Henry and Celia Grant, recently of Tripola, Iowa. Henry and Celia have been driving south down the west coast of Florida. At an out-of-the-way spot called Benson's Cove, They used a substantial part of their savings to make the purchase of their lives, a luxury yacht that they've named the Harvester. Right now, there's nothing on their minds except that life-fulfilled dream. But soon, they will remember the clipping. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. They'll remember.
Well, Celia, I reckon we better stop gawking and get on board.
What are you up to, Henry?
The Harvester's not going to do us much good tied up here at the dock. I'm going to figure out how to start the motor, and away we'll go.
Henry, you can't do that. You've never been in anything bigger than a rowboat.
Oh, I think the old combine was as big as this yacht. And I imagine the machinery was about equally complicated. I've spent most of my life on one kind of machine or another. Have you forgotten already?
Oh, Henry, you're terribly smart around the farm, and you know I've never questioned that. And I don't mind drowning any more than you will. But I am not going to have you backing half our life savings into an ocean liner just because you happened to pull a wrong lever.
Want to run it yourself, my love?
Henry. Now listen, honey. We have to find someone who knows all about ocean yachts and hire him as our crew. At least until you've had a chance to learn how everything works.
Well, I don't see that that's really...
Hallelujah. Your prayer's answered. Praise the Lord.
He must have been very attentive. I wasn't even aware that I was asking the...
Henry, don't be awful. What did you mean, young man?
Vernon Wallace, ma'am, and I can see you understand how a man talks when he's been saved, always praising.
Of course. And Henry understands, too. Sometimes he just gets a little cantankerous.
Oh, I know how it is. I know how it is, and I don't mind a bit. Now, would you be Brother Henry and Sister Celia?
We are not brother and sister. We're married.
Oh, I get it, old timer. Some kidder. Well, now, Mother Grant, Brother Morican tells me he just sold this boat to a couple of rich Iowa farmers who don't know the stem from the stern. And if they don't want to just stand there on the docks drooling at it, he says they're praying right now for an expert navigator.
And you're an expert navigator?
It is the way I make my living, sir. Praise the Lord.
Oh, Henry, how wonderful. We will take him, won't we?
Well, I expect it'll be all right to watch somebody else for a few days till I get the hang of it myself.
Great, great, great. Now, that's the spirit, old-timer. Listen, I'll just get my sea bag, and I'll be right with you.
Henry, why are you so hostile to that fine young man?
Not hostile, Celia. Maybe not entirely convinced.
Of what? Surely you're not going to be suspicious of a man who has been saved.
Not as a general rule. But, of course, there's always...
Always what, Henry?
Always the case of Judas Iscariot.
Rock of ages, left for
there
me.
He goes again.
Henry, let surely you're not objecting to a young man who'd rather sing one of the great hymns instead of that heathen rock and roll.
No, I'm... It's very inspiring. Maybe before we get back to land, he'll learn another hymn.
I like it. Well, Henry, I see you're wood carving again.
Yeah. I'm going to settle down to some serious time wasting now. Especially till I learn how to run this boat for myself.
Well, is that... It is. It's the Harvester you're modeling.
Yeah.
And that's why you've been doing all the measuring all over the boat.
Well, it wouldn't do not to have the proportions right. Are you worried about shavings on this spotless deck, my love?
Oh, of course not. One sweep of the broom and they'll all be in the ocean, gone forever. Henry, I do like a young man strong in the faith.
Me too, Celia. But the real religious folks don't go around shoving you into line. The ones who shove you are after something that's not good for you.
Honey, he carries his Bible with him all the time. And those pamphlets about salvation in his pocket. And he's always singing hymns.
Yep, packaged like soda crackers. To sell.
To sell what, Henry?
I don't know. Himself, maybe.
Oh, what's that?
Thunder, my dear.
Oh, but that means a storm. Only a few minutes ago, everything was so calm and sunshiny and beautiful. Now... Look at that horizon.
Well, it's often like that, even in Iowa. Celia, I think you'd better know. I've been prowling around the boat in odd places, taking measurements.
Yes, for your wood carving.
Yeah. This is going to be to absolute scale, inside and out. Down in the hole, where normally neither one of us would ever look, under the firehouse, I found a loaded revolver.
Good gracious.
Now, what's a Bible-carrying, pamphlet-packing, saved young man doing with a loaded revolver?
Well, I... Now, wait, Henry. How do you know that's Vernon's gun?
Is it yours?
Well, it could have belonged to the previous owners.
Well, that's what I'd like to imagine, Celia. I'd like to imagine Vernon Wallace doesn't even know it's there.
Blast there, mates. Squall's ahead. Time for landlubbers to go below.
Do we... Should we go, Henry?
Why, of course, my love. In a storm, the waves will sweep anyone off the deck. Just like the wood shavings.
Yes, yes, I'm sure you're right, Henry. Let's go below. That's dreary rain, Henry.
Rain seldom makes anything more fun, my dear.
And we're trapped in here. In case...
Well, out there, all he'd have to do would be to shoot, and we'd fall in the water in here, at least.
Henry, what's this on the dresser?
Well, that. Now, that's something else I found while I was prowling around this morning. I took up the mattress to measure the exact dimensions of the bunk from the floor, and there this was, between the mattress and the bunk.
Why, it's a gold watch. How could it have...
Yes, I know, old-fashioned type, but new. Now, it must have belonged to the original owner of the harvester. I'll have to try to get it back to him. I guess he mislaid it. And whatever Merican did to redecorate the boat before he sold it again, he sure didn't take up the mattress. So he didn't find Willoughby's watch.
Willoughby?
Well, I deduce that, my love, from the inscription here. To George Willoughby from the gang at the plant, Akron, 1979. And there's a big 35 in the middle, I expect. That's how long he worked there.
Willoughby, Henry, didn't I read in the paper about a Mr. and Mrs. George Willoughby of Akron?
No doubt, my dear. Hundreds of Willoughbys in the world. Well, that's funny. Watch seems to be all wound up, but it doesn't go. Now, that's odd for a practically new watch. Let me take off the back here and see. Well.
What is it?
Well, no wonder the watch won't go. It's got a piece of paper stuck in the works here, folded up like a message.
Is there a message, dear?
Yes, my love. There's a message. And I guess George Willoughby hoped the next owners of this boat would find it.
What's the message, Henry?
One word. Looks hastily scrawled. Murder.
I'm sure you've all had a visit from a relative you really didn't want to see, or a guest who just wouldn't go home at bedtime. But I hope you've never found yourself with a visitor who might be a threat to your life, or again, might not. That's now Henry and Celia Grant's problem with their navigator on the Harvester.
You remember, dear, the Willoughbys of Akron. Washed up on shore in their formal clothes, both dead.
Willoughby. Yes, I do remember now.
And they had bought a boat, the Flamingo. A boat a lot like this one.
They were high society, not farmers. Probably they usually celebrated by dressing for dinner, and if they were out on the ocean celebrating their new boat...
Yes, if they were out on the ocean, what happened at that dinner party? What... Oh, That watch may be...
Hi, old timer. Evening, Mother Grant.
Hello, Grant.
Good evening.
Well, what's the matter? My old friends sound on edge here.
We are.
Yeah, the ocean's getting a little rough, I will admit. Are you seasick?
No. No, we got on the other side of that by noon.
Good. Good, great. You old timers always did set the pace for us, youngsters. And a storm at sea can be pretty scary, too. Every crack of thunder sounds like it's going to split you right in two. And every time a wave hits, old Tub pitches just like it's headed for the bottom. I won't blame you if you get uneasy.
We're not afraid of the storm, Vernon.
And you are right, old Tama. Tie the old stick and play his head straight into the waves and relax. Ride right through a tidal wave.
Vernon, this afternoon down in the hold, Henry found a gun.
Oh? This gun, you mean?
Yes, Vernon. That gun.
Well, now, I didn't mention it to you folks because I didn't want to worry you.
What would worry us, Vernon?
I told you that anything that had to do with navigation, I'd take care of, and I can, and I will.
Yes, Vernon.
But in the past few years, in the Bermuda Triangle, there have been lots of boats like this.
Yes?
They sailed out to sea with expert navigators at the helm and the weather perfect. But they disappeared. Without a trace.
Well, now, how could that be, Vernon?
Well, there's buried treasure in these parts, and adventurers go looking for it. And sometimes those adventurers run into pirates, real 1980 pirates, complete with planes and battleships, see? And that's what this gun is really about, because I want to take good care of you folks.
One pistol against planes and battleships.
We're not even looking for buried treasure.
Ah, but you see... Your inner treasure. The harvester. These pirates pick up a boat here, a boat there, just by getting rid of its owners. And they sail this stolen vessel into an old, out-of-the-way cove.
Benson's Cove, for instance?
Sure, old-timer, like Benson's Cove. They alter the boat's outward appearance, they repaint it and equip it with forged paper, they sell it again as soon as they can.
At a bargain price?
Of course.
And so long as they didn't overwork any one spot too often, they could keep up this kind of piracy forever without being caught.
Right on the money, old-timer.
But how could these pirates get hold of their stolen boats in the first place?
That's easy, Mother Grant. When they sell a stolen boat, they just sell it to someone who have to have a crew. And they arrange for one of their own men to be that crew. They give them a Bible, a few salvation tracts picked up from local revival meetings. They tell him to mumble a few hymns he's learned on the farm before he went to reform school. Create credibility among the gullible agents.
Credibility is the magic word today.
Oh, yeah, right on. With credibility, you can always find some rich dummies who's got lots of dough but no brains. And they'll invest a fortune in a boat when they don't even know which end sails forward. Yeah, but you'd never fall into such a dumb trap, would you, old-timer?
But I still don't understand.
Just ask me, Mother Grant.
What happens to the owners of a stolen boat?
Why, this rogue the sucker's trusted just waits for a good storm. Then he just points a gun, like this one, at his victims, like this. And he orders them up on deck. And in seconds, the waves from the storm just take care of the owners.
Victims of the Bermuda Triangle. Just like the newspaper said.
You're right, Mother Grant. Dead right.
But what if the victims refuse to go?
Refuse to go?
Yes. What if the victims won't do what the villain says?
What if they refuse to go? What kind of a question is that for a helpless elderly man staring into the business end of a revolver? And if the man holding the gun is asked a question like that, what can he answer?
What do you mean, what if they refuse to go?
What if they refuse to be this bad man's suckers?
Oh. Well,
In that case, this fella just aim his gun at the tomb, pull the trigger twice like this.
When I found that gun, Vernon, I removed the firing pin and dropped it overboard.
Yeah. Yeah, I see you did. Now, how'd you manage that?
Farmers these days spend most of their lives with machinery. Taking apart a firearm is simpler than most jobs I used to have in a day.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it is, huh? Well, you spend a few years in the city, you forget what life on a farm is really like. Well?
Well?
In a case like this, a nasty pirate fella'd have to go at it the messy way, wouldn't he?
What would that be, Vernon?
He'd have to use his pistol for a hammer and beat out the brains of his stubborn victims.
But he'd run into a problem there, too.
Oh, really? Such as?
But one hint, Vernon. If you go on with this kind of work, don't ever call your elders old-timer.
Oh?
They don't like it. And what's more to the point, for your business, they don't trust anybody who does it. You remember I've been carving wood off and on ever since we put out to sea?
Yeah, I remember that.
Since I found that gun, I've been careful to keep the knife right here in my pocket. And you can see it's unusually sharp, and I'm quite expert with it.
Well. More goes on the minds of you old codgers than one might think, huh?
Now, I know, Vernon, at some point you're planning to throw that gun in my face. That's what I'd think of in your fix, but I advise you, don't try it.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, old codgers also dodge a lot quicker than you think. In the second place, the boat's pitching pretty wildly now, and the chances of your aim going true are very slight. And in the third place, if you try it, I shall most certainly stick you with this in the front and out the back.
Nice old man like you.
I've killed more hogs than you have mosquitoes, young man. Now, if I were you, I'd drop that gun. Thank you.
Listen, you ice-blooded pig-sticker. When you found that pistol, why didn't you just take it and shoot me?
Without being sure what you were, why, that would have been murder, young man. Now, I have one more question for you. Celia, hand me that watch.
Yes, sir.
What is George Willoughby's watch doing?
Willoughby's watch? You're mad.
With this message, Vernon.
Now, come
murder.
On. Come on now, who are you and what are you doing here?
And what's that name you keep confusing with the harvester? Young man, are we the new tenants of the Flamingo?
Give me the watch!
Get this thing back! Look out, you young
fool! Give me that! No!
Henry, are you all right?
Yes. Yes, my dear, I'm all right, but I think Mr. Wallace may need a little nursing. I'll keep my eye on him, but if you could take a look at him...
I'll just do that, Henry.
Be careful, Celia.
I will, dear... Henry, no one can help Vernon now.
Oh, my. I didn't mean to kill him. Honestly, Celia.
I believe you, Henry.
As he came at me, the boat lurched, and I fell right against his chest with...
He was intending to kill us, dear. We were only defending ourselves. And you had an accident. Anyone could see that.
Yes, of course. At least I think so.
What do you mean, Henry?
Well, you know, you thought he was such a wonderful young man.
Yes, I did. Clean cut, courteous, considerate.
Bright and helpful and safe.
Yes, but that was all a fake. He was a thief and a killer.
Yes, we know that now, but who else knows it?
Perhaps he's done this sort of thing before.
I'm sure he has. But the only people who know that are at the bottom of the sea where he intended to put us.
Something dropped out of his inner coat pocket.
What? His Bible.
And those papers on
it. Yeah, just religious tracts. See, it says on the cover here.
Yes.
Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
Oh, no. It's a message. To us.
Oh, Celia, you just said it was an accident.
Yes, but you said who else would know it.
Yes, I did. Anybody else who knew him might have thought of him just as you did at first.
Henry, there has to be some proof of who he was and what he was. Something we can show people and they'd be certain to believe us.
Well, we've never looked into his cabin.
It wouldn't have been nice.
Well, we'd better look now.
Steady.
Steady, my dear. Waves are really getting rough.
Yes. Here's his cabin. Oh, he's locked the door.
Now, he always did, but of course it is our boat, and I have a key, too. There we go.
I found the light switch.
Be careful.
Oh, look. How neat everything is. The bed made, everything picked up. My goodness, our Raymond never kept a room like this, I must say.
Well, boys don't, you know, dear. At least not ordinary boys.
Now, here's his suitcase.
Yeah, let me get it up on the bed.
It's locked.
Well, I'll open it with a knife.
Henry, that's the knife.
I know. But I wiped the blood off on his clothes. Here, let me get at that lock.
Oh, Henry, I'm afraid.
Of what now?
We don't know what's inside the suitcase.
No, but we've got to find out.
Why, it's full of money.
There must be hundreds of dollars in bills and also neatly bundled.
You'd expect that.
Where do you think he got them?
From his evangelism, maybe. You remember he said he did take up collections. And sometimes there's lots of money in even one of those collections.
So if anyone found him with all this money, he could say it was from the Lord for the Lord's work.
Perhaps it was, Henry. He did seem like such a nice young man.
Celia, have you forgotten the gun in his hand when he ordered us on deck? And the clicks when he tried to shoot us?
But Henry, maybe he thought we were trying to kill him. Maybe he was a nice young man, but he carried the gun to protect himself from people like us.
Oh, come on. You don't really believe that.
But other people might. They very well might, especially if they found us here with his corpse and his suitcase and all his money.
Well, if they do that... No. No, by thunder, they won't do that.
Why won't they?
No one saw us leave. So if we just dispose of Vernon's body...
Dispose?
Chuck it overboard, Celia. Into the sea.
But the body might someday wash ashore.
Even so, they could never prove, never even suspect that the body came from this boat.
But Henry...
Yes?
What if there's been a mistake?
What kind of a mistake?
I don't know. If I knew, it wouldn't be a mistake.
My dear, there is always a possible mistake. But our worst mistake would be not to take reasonable precautions.
Perhaps so, Henry. Then let's do it. Right away. Yes.
Ah! Celia, what is it?
Out the porthole there! Toward the horizon!
I don't see anything.
It's gone now. But there in the sky, there was a light.
A light? Oh, you mean lightning.
No, Henry, a light. Round, steady in one place, glowing like a giant sea monster's eye.
Celia, you're letting your imagination run away with you now.
Well, you know, Vernon did say this is a very strange part of the ocean. Some people have brought back weird, frightening tales. Who knows what might be out there?
Celia, we have plenty of problems right inside this boat without worrying about spooks outside. Now, come on. Let's get this young man overboard.
Of course, Henry. You know best.
Vincent Price again, and here's the fourth act of The Voyage of No Return.
You know, Henry...
Yes, my love?
When we've disposed of Vernon...
Yes, Celia.
Well, it'll be just as he said.
What do you mean?
He was right. Neither you nor I know the first thing about navigating a boat, even in perfect weather. We'll never...
Come on, Celia. Let's get back to Vernon. We've got to face this situation as we've faced everything else for the last 43 years. One thing at a time.
Yes, Henry. Of course.
Now, steady. There's nothing to fear from Vernon anymore.
Poor boy. He looks almost like our Raymond asleep, doesn't he?
Well, Raymond never tried to kill us that I know of. Come on. We've got to get rid of him.
One thing, he's just bled in front there. There won't be any messy cleaning up to do.
No, it won't be like the time Raymond cut his foot with the axe.
Oh, dear.
My dear, I'm afraid I'm not quite strong enough to do this alone. Would you take his other leg and help me?
Yes, of course, Henry.
You see it? Let me get this door open. There! Now, don't go out on deck. Just push him out of the waves. We'll take care of the rest.
Henry! The boat gave such a lurch and flung me out here on the deck!
I know. Me too, and it slammed the door after us.
Where? Where's Vernon?
He went over with that first wave.
Then... we'll never see him again.
No, but if we don't get back inside fast, we'll join him. Now, watch your footing. The water's made the deck as slippery as oil. No, it's all right. Just a few more inches and...
Henry! That light! What? It's blinding me!
No!
What's he saying?
He wants us back inside. And we better go, too.
Oh, I can't get the door open. The wind's blowing so hard.
Let me help. Come on, we'll both pull.
Oh.
Hard now. Hard as you can.
That wave almost got us.
Yes, and the next one will pull here. Pull. There. There now. We're safe.
Safe? With that light hanging in the sky above us and that voice? What could it... Wait. I know.
What do you know, my dear?
Henry! Don't you see? Out the porthole in that last flash of lightning, about half a mile away, there's a ship out there, a giant ship.
Yes, I thought I saw something. Dude, it could have been...
And that light hanging in the sky, don't you understand? It's a helicopter from that ship.
Yes. Yes, that would explain that voice. But why in this terrible storm?
Oh, Henry, darling, it's all too clear. Vernon was a pirate.
Oh, one man, a pirate, Celia. For heaven's sake, pirates travel together in... Oh. In... Oh, good heavens.
Yes, exactly. In ships like that one out there. They might even be going to land on our deck with that helicopter, and then they'll...
Celia, listen to me now. Go back to Vernon's room, turn out the light, and lock the door. Do you hear? Unlock it only if you hear me say so.
Well, what will you do?
This knife isn't much, but they'll have to get past me to get to you.
No! I won't leave you, Henry. Whatever is going to happen to you is going to happen to us.
Celia, I insist, I demand...
Henry! It's going to be all right.
What? What's going to be all right?
In that flash of lightning, I saw the helicopter right out that porthole, and below it, two men on a rope ladder.
Well, then they'll be here in no time at all.
Yes, but on the underside of the helicopter, I saw red stripes and the words United States Coast Guard.
Oh, thank God.
We'll be safe now. And I suppose there's no sign of Vernon.
Not a trace.
Oh. Oh, but Henry, you know that money. We must try to get it back to the people it belongs
to. Celia, there's no way to find out who they were or who owns which part of what.
What do you think we should do with it, Henry? Perhaps some worthy cause.
Oh, good heavens.
What, Henry?
That money. If those Coast Guardsmen should get suspicious...
But why should they? They said...
You said there wasn't any trace
of Vernon. But how could we explain all that money in his suitcase?
Oh, I see what you mean. It'll look more than ever as though we've killed Vernon for his money and disposed of him. Gina.
Come on, open up. It's the United States Coast Guard. Open the door.
It's not locked.
Don't move. We've got you covered.
I'm not moving.
Where's the man who was just with you?
Henry, he's right. He was here just a moment ago. I don't know where he is now.
Watch her. I'll look around. We saw him in the searchlight. He has to be here.
Oh, Henry's here, young man. He was just standing beside me. But you be careful what you do. Henry may be frightened, but he wouldn't hurt a fly. And don't you hurt him.
Don't worry, ma'am. We know what we're doing. Where's the crew for this boat, ma'am?
There's no crew, young man.
We're checking all boats from southern Florida now out at sea.
Why should you do that?
We're looking for a young man. We've trailed as far as a place called Benson's Cove. There we lost him. His name is Vernon Wallace.
What about this Vernon Wallace? Oh! What have you done to my husband?
Well, take it easy, lady.
Now, just relax.
Henry!
No one will be hurt.
What have you done?
All right, Celia. Just a little distraction for the officers.
Davidson, I think the storm has jarred this man's brain.
How so, sir?
Well, I found him in the aft cabin, standing on the bunk, throwing his suitcase out the porthole. When I ordered him to put up his hands, he tried to climb out the porthole himself. He didn't stop when I fired a shot into the air. I had to drag him back.
Yeah, I'm all right now, officer. I'm afraid the terror of being adrift in this storm unhinged me for a moment.
Don't worry about it, sir. We all have our wobbly moments in the face of the unknown. Hey, this night must have been pretty terrible for both of you.
Oh, it was that, young man.
Yeah, well, I could tell you some stories.
Not now.
Yes, sir.
You'd probably like to have Davidson here pilot the boat back to harbor for you.
Oh, we'd be so grateful, officer.
The helicopter and the patrol boat out there will both be keeping an eye on you.
Splendid.
Before I leave, is there anything else?
Why? What else would there be?
I was hoping you might be able to give us some word about young Vernon Wallace.
Why?
The authorities want to talk with him. He fits the description of a mystery man who's been specializing in robbery and murder on the high seas.
Oh.
Oh, there's some harebrained talk about a Vernon Wallace being connected with a 20th century pirate gang. That's crazy, of course.
Oh, yes. Crazy.
But since you can't tell me anything about him, I'll be on my way.
Wait.
Yes, sir?
I do have something to tell you about Vernon Wallace.
Henry. Henry, is this wise?
Wise and urgent. As you say, Commander, the shock of all this did unhinge me for the moment. Though not quite in the way you think.
Why are you doing this, Henry?
Because there is a man in Benson's Cove who must be arrested at the earliest possible instant.
Benson's Cove, sir?
Gregor Merikian, the man who sold us the Flamingo. I think I can tell you things you ought to know about him, about international pirates, and about Vernon Wallace.
I'm especially glad you changed your mind about Wallace.
Especially glad about Wallace?
Well, you can see lying right there, sir. His name on the cover of that Bible. And the Bible soaked in fresh blood. Naturally, we'd have always wondered.
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, The Voyage of No Return, was written by Edward Borges. and produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Your host was Vincent Price. Our stars were Jeanette Nolan, Parley Bear, and Eddie Firestone. Featured in the cast were John Shea and Michael Rye. The music for Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. John Harlan speaking. The Elliot Lewis production of Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
This is Cicely Tyson. Join us tomorrow when I'll have another story that illustrates one of love's many faces.
Now, before we get involved with Fibber McGee and Molly, we'll check up on the Great Gildersleeve.
Now, gang, going from glamour to more glamour, we present by special request one of your favorite pinups and mine, too. Here she is, sugar and spice and everything nice, Miss Jean Parker.
Thank you, Bart. And hello, everybody.
Welcome to this mail call for the Airborne Infantry, Jean. You know, a lot of the boys wrote in and asked that you appear.
They did?
Yes, it seems the glider troops have voted you as the girl on whose rooftop they'd most like to land.
Well, that's quite an honor. Although I'll have to start doing my sunbathing elsewhere.
Oh, I don't think that's anything to worry about.
Well, I don't worry about regular planes, but those gliders with no motors, they sneak up on you.
Oh. I beg your pardon, Mr. Marshall, but my name is Gildersleeve.
Oh, come right in. Well, it's nice to see you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, it's nice to see you, Mr. Marshall. And that's a very cute little glider you're towing there.
Yeah. There she is. Jean, may I present Mr. Gildersleeve? This is Miss Parker.
Yeah.
Why, it's a thrill meeting you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes, yes, that's what they all say. So you're Miss Parker.
That's right.
Well, I've been having trouble with my fountain pen. I wonder if you could drop by my house sometime and fix it.
But, Mr. Gildersleeve, that's a different Parker. I couldn't fix your fountain pen.
Oh, well, drop by anyway, will you? As a matter of fact, it isn't even broken. Mr. Marshall, who is that other little pigeon over there? I may as well meet them all.
Why, Mr. Gildersleeve, aren't you being a little fickle?
Oh, don't worry, my dear. There's enough of me for everybody.
And enough left over for Lassie to come home to.
By George. What was that again? Oh, yeah. This is a night, isn't it? No fooling, Herb. Am I going to meet that little blonde hors d'oeuvre or not?
All right. Gloria to Haven.
Yes, Mr. Marshall.
This is Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, I'm glad to know you, my dear.
I'm glad to know you, my dear.
Well, well, another admirer. Are there any more bits of beauty around here, Herb?
Well, there's only one other glamour girl on the program tonight.
Great, what are you waiting for? Trot her out, trot her out.
Okay, here she is, Miss Marjorie Main.
Thanks, Bart.
Hee, trot her back.
Marjorie, I'd like to have you meet the great Gildersleeve.
What's so great about him?
Well, I asked to meet her. I should have quit when I was ahead.
No, Now, I want you two to be friends. And remember, Marjorie, men like Mr. Gildersleeve don't grow on bushes.
Where do they grow? Under rocks?
Now, don't run me down, lady. The only one I ever see you in the movies with is Wallace Beery, with his stomach hanging over his belt.
Well, don't get high hat just because you've captured yours. My trouble is that I've been cast wrong in pictures. They've always got me in a barnyard or log cabin or walking around bare feet. You can't be a glamour girl with just your feet a-showing.
Well, Marjorie, this is Mail Call, where everybody's dreams come true. We're going to make you a glamour girl. You're going to be a grand lady with beautiful gowns and jewels and a bathtub. And you live in a beautiful mansion.
This I got to see.
You'll not only see it, Mr. Gildersleeve, but you'll be in it.
What, in the bathtub?
Well, hardly. You're going to be Marjorie's suitor, a wealthy young man who is madly in love with her.
Phew. Whatever happened to the fountain pen girl and the blonde hors d'oeuvre?
Keep your mind on this. You're the boyfriend. Marjorie Main is your high society fiancé, and I'm going to be the butler. May we have a little Park Avenue music, please?
Oh, Jives! Jives!
Yes, milady?
What are you doing over there, Jives?
Browsing through the family photograph album, milady. Tell me, who is this lying on the bearskin rug?
Oh, well, that's me when I was 6 months old.
Lumpy little thing, weren't you?
Rather.
Miss Gwendolyn, I wish to inform you that I am leaving your service.
Leaving?
Yes, kindly erase my ring from the bathtub.
But you can't leave now. I'm expecting my boyfriend this evening. Oh, that's he. Or should have said him or here.
I've seen him, milady, and I'm not sure what he is either.
Jives, remember you're a butler in a fancy mansion. Now open that door before I slug you.
Yes, milady.
Rather.
Ah, greetings, Gwendolyn, my little turtle dove. More turtle than dove, of course.
Hi, Reggie, my rum-dumb millionaire. I see you're wearing tail.
Nice of you to use the plural.
Now that you're here, I want a kiss, darling.
Oh, certainly, my dear. Oh, Jives?
Yes, sir?
Kiss Miss Gwendolyn.
Very good, sir.
Well, do the best you can.
Not on your life. I'm not kissing no butler. I'm going to kiss you, sweetheart.
Oh, well, okay. Brace yourself. Here goes.
I'm ready. Smack me.
Have to get that vulcanized. Well, how was that?
I'm going back to Wally Beery, stomach and all.
Thank you. Thank you, Marjorie Main, Gene Parker.
Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer, bring you another visit with Fibber McGee and Molly. Again, we invite you to listen to the transcribed adventures of Fibber McGee and Molly. The show is written by Phil Leslie and Ralph Goodman and directed by Max Hutto. We'll see what's going on in Wistful Vista shortly.
Oh!
What's the trouble, McGee?
Stomach's upset, I guess. Must have been that stuffed green pepper sandwich I had before lunch.
Couldn't have been the banana egg pickle cauliflower salad you whipped up after lunch.
No, but maybe I shouldn't have had that snack of barbecued eggplant a while ago.
Well, I guess I won't have to fix a big supper since you probably won't feel like eating.
Oh, now, wait a minute, kiddo. You can't do that to me. I'm going to drink a glass of Alka-Seltzer right now, and by supper time, I'll be ready for anything.
Oh, sure.
Well, you can't keep a good man down, can you, Fibber? And it's a natural fact that a glass of Alka-Seltzer is the gentle, dependable way to get really effective relief for an upset stomach. Once you try it, you'll agree. There's nothing quite like Alka-Seltzer.
Hey, Molly, the mail came.
Oh, good. I love mail call at Christmas time. Wait till I move these cards on the mantel and make room for the new ones.
Not so many this time. Tail end, I guess.
Oh, who are they from? Let me see. Open them up.
Oh, take it easy. Take it easy. I'm opening them. This one's from the Toopses.
Let me see it. Merry Christmas, it says. Oh. Morton Mabel. Oh. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Original, too. Merry Christmas. I wonder who composed that message for Mort. He must have had Ernest Hemingway working on that, or maybe Eddie Guest.
Don't be snide.
I'm just kidding, kiddo. This time of year, I love everybody. From here on in, I'll be the sweetest, gentlest old character. What you looking at?
The Christmas cards. Open them up, sweet, gentle character, before I pop.
Okay. Let me see. That one's from the plumber. That's the bank. Oh, hey. Here's one from Teeny. I made it herself, too. Look. A candle and wreath, I think.
Isn't that sweet? What does it say?
At Christmas time, many friends I boast, but you, dear friends, I dig the most, Teeny. I'll have to take this down to the Elks Club and show it to the...
Company, dearie, come in.
Merry Christmas, kids.
Oh, thank you, Doctor, and the same to you.
Yes, come in, come in, come in, Docky, old boy. It's always wonderful to see our dearest friend during the Yule season. Take the good doctor's good hat, my dear.
What happened, Molly? Did little Scrooge here have a visit from Marley last night?
You see, Marley, try to be nice to him. Oh, doggone it, you know.
Oh, doctor, now you hurt his feelings.
I'm sorry, he took me by surprise, that's all. Here, my boy, I brought you a present. Will that help?
Oh, gee, for me? No kidding.
No, don't open it, not till Christmas.
No.
Put it under the tree there with the others.
Okay. Gee, Doc, that's sure sweet of you.
Well, I'd have had it here sooner, only... Well, this year I wanted to get something a little different for you.
Well, that's good. Frankly, I'm kind of tired of you giving me whatever your mother gave you last year. The only thing that fits so far was that cigar humidor.
Oh, McGee.
Doc knows I'm just kidding, Molly.
Sure.
He also knows that what's in that package there ain't important. It's the sentiment that counts.
That is correct.
It's just like Uncle Dennis said one time. All his friends chipped in one year, Doc, and they gave Uncle Dennis a jug of brandied peaches.
Brandied peaches?
Yep, and I'll never forget it. Uncle Dennis sort of wiped his eyes on his sleeve, and he choked up a little, and he said, "Fellas," he said, "it's not the gift of the peaches that counts. It's the spirits in which it was given."
Well, that's a mighty fine attitude. Like I said in my Christmas card. Oh, by the way, did you kids get my card all right?
Oh, that we did, Doctor, and it is beautiful.
Well,
it's right there on the mantle in the center there.
In the place of honor, Doc.
Well, that's very flattering.
Well, you're the very best friend we got, Doc. I may razz you and kid around a lot, but that's true.
Thanks.
Well, I want you to know that I appreciate how nice you've been to Molly and me all these years, George. And no matter what happens, if I ever forget you or forget how swell you've been to us, just give me a fast kick in the teeth.
Gee, that's mighty nice to hear, McGee. I know how you feel, and believe me, I feel the same way about you. I got to run, kids. I got an operation this afternoon in the hospital.
Bye, Doctor.
See you Sunday for dinner, and thanks again for the... Ah, there goes a wonderful guy. One of nature's biggest noblemen.
Yes, and I'm real proud of you, McGee. That little speech you made.
Yeah, well, I kind of get tongue-tied when it comes to saying something nice, but Christmas gives me courage.
Bully for Christmas.
And I meant every word of that, too. There's a guy we'll never forget, right?
Wonderful man.
He's on top of our list.
He certainly is. He is the sweetest kind. Oh, my goodness.
What's the matter?
List.
Hmm?
Remember, I kept telling you there was someone we forgot to put on our Christmas card list?
Oh, my gosh. Him.
Yes.
The guy we'll never forget, we forgot.
No wonder he never mentioned getting our card. Oh, and it's too late now. Even if we mail it this morning, he still won't get it on time.
Gee whiz, this is... Oh, my gosh, what are we... Hold it. Hold everything.
What?
I got a great idea. We got any cards left for Doc?
Why, yes, but how are we...
He'll be at the hospital for an hour or so let's go. I'll run out and get the car started.
But, McGee...
You grab a Christmas card, your hat and coat, and the tea kettle, and meet me out in front and hurry.
Tea kettle? Why? What?
I'll explain it when we get there. Hurry up. Get the tea kettle. Let's go.
In just a moment, we'll try to straighten out the McGees.
This is Eleanor Engel. I suppose most everyone feels a little tired by the time Christmas finally arrives because of all the entertaining and shopping. But don't lose sight of this fact. One of the common causes of loss of pep and energy is vitamin shortage. Now, your meals may not supply enough of the vitamins necessary for physical well-being, so don't take chances. Guard against vitamin shortage this pleasant, low-cost way. Every day, regularly, take one-a-day brand multiple vitamin tablets. One-a-day brand multiple vitamins provide all the vitamins anyone normally needs to take, children and adults. One-a-day vitamins are smooth-coated, easy-to-take tablets that leave no aftertaste. And remember, they include vitamin B12. So get them at your drugstore soon, in the blue box with the big red one. Then, to guard against vitamin shortage, do this. Every day, regularly, take one-a-day brand multiple vitamin tablets.
Come on, Molly, let's hurry.
McGee, I don't like this kind of sneaky stuff. Ducking down alleys.
It's the only way we can get in the back door of Doc's apartment building is down the alley, Molly. What's he going to think if he don't get a Christmas card from us this year? He'll think we're a rat.
I know.
Come on, in this way. And don't drop that tea kettle. Hurry up down the hall here. Apartment 10.
I still don't know what the tea kettle is for. Let's just slip our card under his door and go home. He'll get it
over. Slip it under the door? With no stamp on it? No postmark?
I never thought of that. I guess he would know we forgot to mail it to him, wouldn't he?
Why, certainly. That's why we're doing this thing my way, my dear. We are not going to let old Doc know we forgot him. He always leaves his door key under the mat here. Now, let me see. Yeah, here it is.
Got the key? Is it there?
Yep. Now, look both ways down this hall. Is anybody coming? Is the coast clear?
So far, yes.
Okay. Now, when I open this door, let's jump in fast and close it in case anybody comes up those back steps. You ready?
Ready.
Molly. Molly, let me in.
What took you so long?
All right. Get playful and get us caught.
Sorry.
Now, come on now. Get some water boiling in that tea kettle while I go through Doc's mail. Just as I hoped. Here's his morning mail, and he was too busy to open it, you see?
Now, wait just a minute. You're not going to steam open Dr. Gamble's mail.
Not his personal mail. Look, I want to find a Christmas card here without any return address on the envelope. Here's one right here.
So?
So, we steam this envelope open, take out whosever card is in it, and put the card up there on the mantle with his others.
Yes?
Then we put our card in this envelope, reseal it, and put our name and address on the back of it.
Oh, that way it has a postmark on it.
Right.
It's been through the mail, and he thinks we mailed it to him, huh?
Right.
So we just leave it here with the other unopened mail, and when he gets home tonight and opens it?
No. Wait a minute. We better not leave it here. We better take it outside and put it in Doc's mailbox, so he'll think it came in the afternoon mail.
Why?
Suppose he looked over this stuff this morning, just looking for return addresses, to see who the cards are from. He knows good and well there wasn't any card there with our name on the back of the envelope.
Say you think of everything.
You betcha. Us sneaky type guys, I gotta think of everything. Now, if you'll get that tea kettle going and work up some steam, we'll open the envelope, put our card in it, and put it out in Doc's mailbox and get on home.
I'm glad you stopped in again, Doctor. Will you stay for dinner? I'm getting ready to start it in a bit.
Oh, no thanks, Molly. I got a couple of house calls to make.
How about some coffee, Dockey? The pot's hot.
Oh, that'll be great. It's been a rough day.
That it has. Sit right down there and I'll get the coffee.
Thanks.
You just get finished at the hospital, Doc, or did you...
No, I stopped by my apartment after I left the hospital.
Oh?
The afternoon mail came.
Oh.
And guess what?
Yes?
Some dirty crook cleaned out every mailbox in our building.
What?
My last-minute Christmas cards, checks from my patients, everything stolen.
Oh. And after all our trouble.
I beg your pardon?
I mean all that trouble. Who could have caused all that trouble?
My goodness, that's terrible.
I'd sure like to get my hands on the rat.
So would I.
We just hate people like that, Molly and me, messing with the mail. Gee whiz. I'll bet that lovely Christmas card we sent you a week ago that we've been waiting for you to mention it finally got there and got stole.
You know something? People that fool with other people's mail, they're the kind of people that...
Fibber and Molly have a final word for you to come.
You feel so miserable, so out of sorts when you have a cold. Relief is what you want more than anything. And now relief can be yours with Tabsin. Your druggist has it, T-A-B-C-I-N, Tabsin, better than ever for cold relief. Here's how Tabsin helps you. It relieves the sniffles and sneezes, headache, watery eyes, feverish feeling, and general aches and pains. Yes, and you can take smooth-coated, easy-to-swallow Tabsin tablets at any stage of a cold. Get Tabsin at your drugstore and keep it handy. Take it for really fast, effective relief in colds. Be sure you ask for Tabsin, the bright red tablets in the bright red package.
Well, I guess things worked out all right at that, Molly. Even if Doc didn't get our Christmas card, he knows we sent him one anyhow.
Yes. I'd hate for him to ever find out how we sent it to him, though.
Oh, boy, me too. Busting into his apartment, steaming open his letters.
Say, incidentally, where'd you put my tea kettle? Is it out in the car?
Where'd I put it? Didn't you bring it when we left Doc's apartment?
I thought you had it.
I had it? Oh, my gosh. You mean? Oh, I'm going to bed. So long, everybody.
Me too. See you tomorrow.
Fibber, McGee, and Molly transcribed is brought to you Mondays through Fridays at this time by Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer. Dr. Gamble is played by Arthur Q. Bryant. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you can hear our program tomorrow. For in this Christmas program, Fibber tells Teenie the story of the patient little star. The tender Christmas story that so many of you liked last year. Now, this is John Wall bidding you all goodbye and urging you to be with us again tomorrow.
Hear the dramatic story, Woman in My House, weekdays on most NBC radio stations.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.